A little bit different. Instead of being a sermon, we're going to have a discussion. So feel free to make comments or answer any questions that I pose. In fact, I'm kind of relying on it, otherwise it could be very short. So tonight we're going to talk about love. We're going to discuss what love is and how we can use it, but first we're going to start with a baseline question. What is love? So that's the question to you guys. From a worldly perspective, what is love? What does the world say love is? How does the world use the term love? So please, there's the question. What's love? Jim? Yep, worldly perspective.
Big hug.
Big hug, okay. Just affectionate contact is love. Okay. Anything else, Sarah? A feeling. Okay, so it's something that is felt, something that if you don't feel it, it's not love. Okay, that's good. Anything else? Jamie?
To the world, love means it's something everybody, for anything, at any time, no matter what. And love means that you can have the everybody.
Just all-inclusive, there's no boundaries to it, it's just out there. Okay, yeah, absolutely. Anything else? Absolutely. And that's where we're going with all this. But, you know, we got kind of a baseline understanding of what the world says love is. You know, it's a mushy love. It's romantic. It's a trivial material love. Or I love my new car. Or I love this new pair of shoes I got or something. It's just a materialistic, simple definition, but it's totally off base. Love is something to be earned. That is something we have seen throughout this world is, you need to win my love. You need to, you know, win back my love. I've heard that several times before. And we've said it's an emotion, it's something along that line. So that's kind of a worldly perspective of love. You know, there are lots of ideas on love, and the Bible is pretty clear on what love actually is. But before we get into the biblical definition of love, we're going to talk about the importance of love. How important is love to God? So we're going to kind of go through some rapid-fire verses here just to kind of build a picture here. So first it's going to be 1 Corinthians 13, verses 1 through 3, if you'd like to turn with me there. So verses 1 through 3. If I speak with tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong and a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mystery and all knowledge, and if I have all faith as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. And then we're going to move over to 1 John chapter 4. Verses 7 and 8. Beloved, let us love one another, for love is from God, and everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. The one who does not love does not know God, for God is love. And then Romans 13, 8 through 10. Owe nothing to anyone except love one another. For he who loves his neighbor has fulfilled the law. For this, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not covet. And if there is any other commandment, it is summed up in this saying, you shall love the neighbor as yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. And then the last one here, Matthew 22, 36 through 40. Teacher, which is the greatest commandment in the law? For he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depends the whole law and the prophets. So I painted a pretty clear picture, at least in my mind. You guys might have picked up on some things that I didn't pick up on. But it paints a clear picture that love is the foundation on which everything we do is built. That is what sets us apart. That is how the world knows us separate from everybody else, is how we love. That is the importance of love. Especially like Romans 13:8, you know, be indebted to no man except in love. We owe love. We are indebted to fellow man in love. We owe it. So we see it's a very important thing. Let's get into the biblical definition of love. So what is some biblical ideas on love? What are some biblical definitions of love? We've got the world idea. We've seen what that looks like. What are some biblical perspectives on love? Yes?
It's a choice.
It is a choice. Okay. It's a choice. Yeah, go ahead.
It never fails.
It never fails. Okay, reference to 1 Corinthians 13 there. Okay, absolutely. It never fails. It's enduring. Anything else? Yeah, go ahead. Yes, it is selfless. It is something that is just freely given. Yeah, Jamie? Yes, there is a negative there could be negative feelings to love. There can definitely be pain involved with love. Just because it's painful or quote-unquote negative, it doesn't mean it's not love. Obviously, we can do things towards each other in a loving way. It hurts. Sometimes you have to have what they call tough love, right? We have to discipline our children. Does that feel good? No, I hate it, but we have to. If we love our children, we have to do that. So yeah, there's some negative things to it. We also see like in John 3:16, we all know the verse, God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son, the first half there. It's a motivator. For God so loved the world that he gave. Gave was his action. Why did he give? Because he loved. That was the motivation behind the action. And so that's kind of what we're looking at. It's a motivator. It's something to move you. We've heard several times, you know, I think Chad's posted the question, sometimes, how do we get us to do? How do we get us to move? How do we get to act? Love is a motivator. And we'll get more into that here in a little bit. It was said already that it is a selfless love. It is freely given. And not like Jamie was talking about earlier, where it's just totally all-encompassing, everything's okay type of selfless. It is just, freely given. It's just a freely given thing. Is they don't have to earn it per se. That is who Christians are. That is who God is, because John said that God is love. So if we are to be Christ-like, we are to be love. So we've seen this thing that's freely given, and you know it is a reflection of God. Once again, John 4, it is the exact image of God is love, and a biblical definition of love. So we've had some good description to this, but let's go to 1 Corinthians 13 again. We're going to read the second half of that. We're going to read it a little bit differently than we normally do. So starting in verse 4 through the first part of verse 8 there. So when we are loving people, I'm going to read it a little differently. It says, so when we love, I am patient, I am kind, I am not jealous, I do not brag, and I am not arrogant. I do not act unbecomingly, I do not seek my own, I am not provoked, I do not take into account a wrong suffered. I do not rejoice in unrighteousness, but I rejoice in the truth. Bear all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things, because love never fails. That's how we are to be. We are to be patient. We are to be kind. We are not to hold grudges. That is who we are to be when we love. So we got a working definition of what love is, so how can we use it? So there's a question to you guys. How do we use that definition of love? And from the time we wake up to the time we go to bed, what can we do to look like 1 Corinthians 13? How can we use that? Because if it doesn't leave the page, it doesn't do us any good. Yes, Matt.
In the face of adversity, we could still continue to love.
Absolutely. That is one of the greatest times to show love is in adversity. It's easy to love when things are good. It's easy to love when everybody loves you back. But when things are hard, that's when we get to shine. That's when we get to stand out as a Christian. We get to love. Anything else? How can we use this? I need some hands, guys. This is going way too fast.
Love your neighbor.
Love your neighbor, okay? And we know who is your neighbor, right? Well, anybody you're in contact with, that is your neighbor. If you have a coworker that you don't get along with, well, they're your neighbor. Well, what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to love our neighbor. You get cut off on the freeway, and someone angers you. Well, that's your neighbor at that moment. You can love them. You don't have to retaliate against them. You can take a deep breath, relax, and just remember to love. Family members that you don't get along with or haven't talked to in a long time. You know, it takes two to fight. It's hard to fight when the other person is absolutely loving you. I mean, if I'm being loved, how can I fight that person who's loving me? Well, vice versa. How can they fight you if you are a loving person? We can use that. Yeah, Jamie. Absolutely. 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 You're probably jumping ahead in my notes already. That's exactly what, that's great. That's exactly what we're looking for, because ultimately, we want them to hear Christ and be part of this, be part of God, be part of salvation. And we are the vehicle in which that happens. But how can we do that if we don't even love them? We're not even kind to them. We're not patient with them. We don't endure trials. We don't, you know, thrive in adversity. How do we do that if we don't love first? I mean, we are the billboard for Christ. Do we want the billboard to be legalistic and very judgmental? These are the rules, and this is what you have to do. Or do we want to be a loving people that is inclusive? And I'm not saying that we accept all sin and wrong. No, we cannot accept that. But we don't want to throw the sinner out with the sin. We can't throw the baby out with the bathwater, essentially. Don't write off the person because of the sin, but we need to love them. Anything else? How can we use 1 Corinthians 13 in our day-to-day lives? That's the question. Sarah.
Love does involve sacrifice. If you're willing to give up something, show love to them, help them get where they need to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Jesus himself was a perfect example of that sacrifice. He did it because he loved us. That is why the sacrifice made. So yes, love is a sacrificial thing in nature. It can be. It can be. Did I see your head, Jen? Yeah, go ahead.
I just want to comment on, you used the word legalistic. I'm not sure everyone knows what that means. It's not legalistic to appeal to God's law out of love for that person.
Right.
In fact, that's what we should be doing. That's what I mentioned this morning in the lesson. So it's legalism is when you have your own standard and impose that on someone, hold them to that. Being legal with God is really being lawful.
Right.
We're supposed to be lawful.
Right.
So, and I know you weren't saying this, and you cleared it up a little bit, but we can't sidestep God's law just to show
right.
Forbearance and toleration and so on. We don't do that, and I just want to make that
right.
Clear.
No, it's perfect you did that, because I wanted to talk a little bit more about that. We are, you know, it's kind of like we're supposed to worship in spirit and truth. We cannot worship in spirit alone. We cannot worship in truth alone. We have to have both. We cannot preach the words of Christ without love, but we cannot preach love without Christ. They are hand in hand, absolutely. And I appreciate you kind of helping me clear that up there. Did I see something, Dick? Did I see your hand?
To me, the love is showing and encouraging when you see somebody that's closer in their life and you know they have the ability to do better and serve God better.
Mm-hmm.
Is to kind of push them to accelerate the
goal. That's right.
Because God even does that in the scripture.
Yes, absolutely. That's absolutely right. Yes, Robbie. Yep, absolutely. That's right. So then the question would be, if our life mirrors 1 Corinthians 13 in the way we act, in the way we deal with people, are we a loving people? Are we a loving person if we mirror 1 Corinthians 13? Are we? Are we? Yes? No? Maybe? It's yes and no, actually. You think about this. So this is really the heart of the lesson. This is really what I want to drive home, is love isn't necessarily only what we do. It's in why we do it. We've all have, I mean, a lot of us have had kids, some haven't, but we've all experienced this. And you tell your kid does something wrong, and you say, apologize. And they go, I'm sorry. Is that an acceptable apology? Did they do the right thing? They apologized, right? But the heart wasn't, it wasn't for the right reasons. They weren't actually sorry. The heart has to be behind this. So actually, I have an example of this. Actually, we'll get on to that in a second. So do we know of any biblical examples of people doing the right thing for the wrong reasons? Right thing, wrong reasons. Anything? How about Jonah? The second half of Jonah. Not where he got swallowed by the fish, but the second half where he went to Nineveh. Did he do the right thing? Officially, technically, yes. He went to Nineveh and preached like he was supposed to, right? Did he do it with the right heart? No, he did not. Was God pleased with him? No. No. He did the right thing. He obeyed. But it wasn't a authentic, heart-driven obedience. It was, I don't know why he did it, to be honest with you. Out of fear, I guess. I'm not really sure. I didn't think about that too much. But Cain and Abel. Did Cain offer a sacrifice? Yes, he did. Did Abel offer a sacrifice? Yes, he did. What was the difference between the two then? Well, it was the reason, the why, the heart behind it. That was the difference between the two. Obviously, one was acceptable and one was not. And we see that throughout sacrifices being accepted or not accepted based on the heart. So we need to have our heart behind it. We need to do it for the right reason. So it's funny because my dad was at work the other day, probably a couple weeks ago now, and he had an opportunity to share the gospel with somebody, and he didn't do it. I don't know why he didn't do it. I don't know if he knows why he didn't do it, but he didn't do it. So he called me that night, and we're talking about it, and he's like, man, I was really disappointed I didn't share the gospel today. I had an opportunity, but I didn't do it. And he's like, I'm really kicking myself. I'm really disappointed in myself. I was like, Dad, you missed the point. He's like, what are you talking about? I was like, Dad, you shouldn't be disappointed in yourself, per se. You should be sad that that person didn't get to hear the gospel. That's the perspective we need to have. It's not about us. It's not about what I did or didn't do. It's that person didn't get to hear the gospel. And that is what we're supposed to be in this for. We're supposed to spread. We're supposed to love our fellow man, to spread the gospel. So that's what we're talking about here. So I got some of the kind of hypothetical questions here, but you need to think about these. So what motivates you? That's the baseline question. What motivates you when you talk to others about the gospel? So I mean, think about that. Do you do it out of a sense of obligation or sense of duty? Well, I was told I need to evangelize, so I need to spread the gospel. Or do you do it out of love? Do you do it because you genuinely want that person to hear the gospel? Do you care if they hear the gospel? Let's start there. Do you even care? Well, once you care, then it gets so much easier to talk about this to people when you truly care about somebody else. You know, what motivates you when you pray? Do you pray for yourself 99% of the time? Do you pray for your friends like you do your family? Probably. I mean, I do. Do you pray for your coworkers like you do your family? Maybe not so much. Do you pray for ISIS and the terrorists out there like you do your family? Because we are commanded to love our enemies. And I'm not saying pray for them to get bombed or anything. Pray for their senses, come to Christ. Do you pray for them like that? Do you care? Do you want them to be saved? Because God loves them like he loves us. We're all lost sinners. He loves them. Why don't we love them? And if we do, let it motivate us to do something about it. That's the whole message behind this, is don't just let love die right here, but do something about it. I mean, we could change John 3:16, God so loved the world that he felt bad about us. Well, that didn't do us any good. He did something about it. Well, let's do something about this. If we truly love each other, and if we truly love God, and we truly love the world and God's creation, let's get up and do something, right? So then the question is, what do we do? I mean, it's a natural thing. Well, let's just start in-house. I mean, I feel really bad about this, but I don't even know everybody's name here. I've been here for like 6 years now, and I don't even know everybody's name, and I'm embarrassed about that. I'm not going to lie. because I haven't put forth the effort to get to know everybody. So what's something we can do is we can just start by getting to know each other. We cannot help each other if we don't know each other, if we don't know each other's problems. Let's get involved with each other. Let's get personable with each other. We have young people here that need guidance, that need our approval and need our teachings. We have elderly people that need to know that they're not forgotten people. They are a valuable asset to us. Let's use them. Let's help them. Let's love each other in that part. We have young couples expecting their first kids that need our excitement, and that's that personal part. Let's get excited with them. That need our advice, when asked, obviously. We have young families that are hanging by a thread, just to let you know that would be me I'm talking about here, that need support, that need sympathy, and a babysitter from time to time. We have families with teenage children. That's a whole different realm, and they need our help. They need to know that we're with them in this, and they will get through this, and to help them through that tough times. We have elders, we have deacons, we have a preacher, who need our appreciation, because their work is hard, and it is rarely even noticed what they do. It is a difficult job, and I thank you guys. This is a very difficult job, and I really appreciate what you do. Chad, I spend a lot of time on this, and you have to do three of these a week. We have work to do. But we have to do it for the right reason. So that's what I wanted to tell you guys tonight, is we need to love each other. We need to love each other in a biblical way, but we need to do something about that love. We need to use that love. So let's start right here. Start in-house. Let's help each other. Let's get to know each other. Let's grow. Let's get excited. And then once we get real strong here, or even while we're getting strong here, spread out. You know, we don't necessarily come here to worship, but we are worshipers who come together. Our worship should spread out from here. We need to love each other. We need to love the world. We need to love God. We need to spread it. And we need to spread it because we love each other. So I didn't run as long as I thought. I was hoping we'd have a little bit more, but I really hope this message made sense to you guys, and I hope it does something. I don't know if it will or not, but this lesson was actually more for me than anybody, and I know exactly what Chad's talking about when he says that, because it's true. Because I struggle with motivation from time to time, and this is what hit me, is I need to love, and I need to act on this love. So thank you, guys. I appreciate the time. I appreciate the participation. So, Bob, if you'd get your song, we can stand together and we'll sing.